Listen to Lizard, but that is a system that you want to bring. You need to think. We got to fight communism because it looks like we on the brink. Connect all the links. The World Party system is taking the power from all of the people. We need to think. When will you listen? These people are evil and want you to think. So what is your plan? Hand in hand, we're standing together because it's the one never to do what you can. Please understand, we got to do better. So walk us, remember that we took a stand. Escúchame. 24 es el año, si se puede. Lucha, lucha por la libertad.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Latino Free Minds. We're back at it again. Two shows in 1 week. So on this episode, one of the things that Danny and myself had talked about kind of when we first even talked about doing this podcast was, you know, informing people and making sure that when they go vote, they're better informed, right? And that also takes being able to speak with candidates. So one of our goals this year is to speak with as many candidates as possible before people go vote, so they can, you know, hear directly from the person. So on this episode, we have Denise Aguilar. She's running for California State Assembly, District 13. Denise, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Another day, right?
Right. Another dollar.
Yeah.
The week is just about over.
For real. Right. So your District 13, I believe, covers was it San Joaquin, right? Does it cover Tracy also?
Yeah, it's Stockton, Lathrop, Tracy, and Mountain House.
Okay. Oh, that's a pretty big area. Mountain House is really growing.
I know. I didn't realize how big it was until I decided to run. I was like, wow, there are a lot of people moved there.
Yeah, and then Lathrop too.
Yeah, I know.
A lot
right?
of new houses out there too. Yeah. So it's definitely it's growing, and it's going to be interesting, right? The kind of people that have potentially moved into the area and how they might sway or not. So it'll be interesting.
Well, it changes the demographics too. You know, with all the new people coming in, everybody like in the rural areas tends to be, you know, Republican, conservative, and all the people moving in from the Bay, me included. You know, I moved way back in 2002. So I have this thing where I used to say that I was from San Jose, but it got to a point where it's like, no, I'm from Stockton now. I've been here long enough. I'm like a Stocktonian now. So
welcome to Stockton. Yeah, after a while, it's like, okay, you're just from here. No, you know, it was very strategic the way they did the redistricting, though. You know, it used to be Stockton, Lodi, Manteca, and it's more purple there. And then they brought in Mountain House, where you have all the Bay Area people who are bringing their ideologies over here. So it's really going to be a lot of work. This is not going to be an easy race at all. But I think it's an opportunity right now because of all the crazy laws that have been passed recently, especially attacking children. I think there's a window of opportunity here to kind of find common ground and get the Democrats, the moderate Democrats, to really have to make a choice, because one of my opponents is endorsed by the California Teachers Association and Planned Parenthood, and the other one is endorsed by all the Democratic legislators, and her husband's voting record hasn't been the best. So people in this county are really upset at what's going on. So even though it's more blue, I think we have a really good chance to bring the issues to the table as, you know, common ground and say, look, we can't even support ourselves in California. How do you expect this to be sustainable?
So just to, you know, to get into your background a little bit, how did you get involved? How did you get to this stage where you're running for state assembly?
Well, I was not always involved in politics. I actually had a really rough upbringing. And at the age of 12, I was jumped into a gang. And from 12 all the way up to 2012, I was an active gang member. So I never had any idea about politics. I didn't care. I was more into fighting my own community over colors and knowing what was going on politically. And then in 2012, I met my husband, who talked to me about the vaccine program, and he handed me an insert and he was like, just read it. And so I read it, I took it home and I read it, and I kind of connected the dots, and I was pissed. And then in 2015, SB 277 was introduced and passed. And I think that was the beginning of my politically active life. I started grassroots organizing and moving against the politicians who were creating these really extreme bills. And then in 2019, we fought against SB 276 and we kicked off civil disobedience with that bill. That was like a attack our doctors, took all medical exemptions, all exemptions to children in public and private school. And we ended up chaining our friends to the doors of the Capitol. We locked it down for 11 days. We were in it for like some of the most most movement the Capitol has ever seen with these types of bills. And then after a couple of years of training myself, in last year we were able to defeat two bills, historical defeats that California has never experienced. And that was SB 866 that lowered the age of consent to 12 to get vaccines mm-hmm. without parental consent or knowledge, and mm-hmm. AB 659 that would have mandated the HPV shot. So I went from the streets of Stockton not having any knowledge on this to just getting so upset. They kept poking the bear. They kept attacking our children. They kept going after parental rights. And Dr. Drew said it. He said the only difference between a pit bull and a mom is a pit bull. Let's go. So
go. Yeah, we've talked about that, is that, you know, they have all kinds of distractions, if you will, you know, ever since you start going to school, entertainment and politics, media, and they keep us distracted while they're manipulating us to go in a certain direction. You know, that's kind of like what this whole show is about. But isn't it funny how it's when you start going after the kids and people's money, when they really start waking up? And I think with COVID going on, you know, you woke up before COVID. You saw all of these things happening before COVID. For the people that were still asleep before COVID, I think it shook them and mm-hmm. realized what was really going on. And then, you know, with the fake science going on, and a lot of people are brainwashed into believing, you know, the whole vaccine, going back to when we were kids and we were vaccinated. But you look at the difference from the vaccines back then to now, it's alarming.
It is. And I think COVID did give people a kind of jolt into the program as a whole. You know, they saw how the junk tobacco science was used with COVID. And then I would tell people, like, if you're mad at that, you need to look at the rest of the schedule. I mean, there's 74 shots on the schedule versus, you know, when I was a kid, I had like, I think 8 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's always been about full transparency. You know, the media and politicians like to label us anti-vaxxers. But for my own personal family, I opt out of the program. But I'm not going to tell somebody else, you can't do that. What I do want is transparency with the pharmaceutical companies, transparency with the lobbying done between the pharmaceutical companies and legislators to pass bills, and truth in the science that they're trying to give us. So, you know, although I opt out of it, I still want to have people to have their choice, but an informed choice. Give them the real information and not hide it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people don't know about the protections that these companies have, the ones that produce the vaccines. And if you think about it, it's unheard of. It's like, what other companies get those type of protections when you can't go after them if they damage, you know, kids? I don't know. I think that's like a little waking up point that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah, it's the only product that's protected under no liability. I mean, I want to know that I can sue somebody if their product hurts me or my child. And to even have that option taken away from us shows us what kind of non-transparency that the pharmaceutical companies actually have.
Yeah, 100%.
No, yeah. And just how you describe that, it's like, just how, like, you know, when it comes to, like I was saying earlier, voting for candidates, it's like, yeah, just the transparency has to be there, right? You know, we're not telling you who to go vote for, but at least hear everything out, look at everything, and then you decide what you want to do, right? Like you said with the vaccine, it's like, you look it up. If you want to take them, it's your choice. If you don't, then also your choice, right? I think that's where, you know, that's the important thing, that we as the people, no matter what it is, we're able to remain free to make the choices we want to make, that we see that are best for, you know, ourselves, our families, and, you know, nobody forcing anything on us.
Yeah, and it's the same with voting. I think all of us are really tired of the party lines, because both parties are responsible for where we're at right now. I have no, you know, loyalty to a politician or to a political party. It's do the right thing. So when you're voting, stop looking. Like, I mean, I was raised Democrat and Catholic. Like, my family came here, you know, to work the farms, and we were told as Latinos that we needed to be Democrats. And so as I'm voting, the only thing I was looking at was, is there a D by their name? I don't even know who I'm voting for. And that's kind of why we're here, right? Mm-hmm. We disconnected from politics, and we just think somebody, you know, when I think of elections and I think of the campaigns, I think of like a high school, like presidential race, where like, we're going to put vending machines in all the cafeterias and all the,
yeah.
Knowing you're not going to do that, right? That's not going to happen. That's what these politicians do. And so when we're voting, it's important to look at who you are voting for, who the candidates mm-hmm. are, where they're getting their money from, what their positions are in their voting record. And it's homework. It's not something that's easy where you can just go and vote. It shouldn't be like that. So mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that 2024 brings people to a space where they're tired of the political party lines, and they're tired of Republicans pretending they're Republicans and voting progressive, and Democrats introducing bills that attack our children. Like, let's look at the real candidate. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping to show that here in my race. You know, it's going to be a decision people are going to have to make. Do you support the direction that California is in? Are you happy? Do you feel represented with what's going on? Because these candidates are endorsed by all the people who created California the way it is. So mm-hmm. you bet when they get up to Sacramento, what they're going to support and how they're going to vote. And that's why it's really clear when somebody endorses you, you're tied to them. Like, you're tied to their vote. You're tied to their behavior. So it's important that people look at the candidates, like really look at them.
Yeah, that I agree with you 100% on that. Cause that's kind of like, you know, a while back, me and Danny were, actually 2022, the election, right, for governor and all that, here in California, we were going through the, you know, the little booklet they send you, and we're just going through them, and you know, it doesn't give you, like you said, all that information about the person, like who endorsed them, what are they into. So mm-hmm. what we started doing is we started going to those people's Twitter's accounts, and yeah. I was like, all right, who, because then on there, they'll, you know, if Planned Parenthood endorsed them, they retweet that, because, you know, it's like a proud moment for them. So you see, okay, he's endorsed by Planned Parenthood. Probably not, you know, or you know what I mean? Like you see, he likes this, and this. It's like, I'm not. but like, it takes time, right? You got to go take time, look into the candidates, because, you know, like you said, it's like, it's not so much that, oh, if it's from the GOP, it's good to go, right? And if it's a Democrat, then it's trash. But you know what I mean? Like, you have to kind of look at both, because at this point, yeah, it does seem like you could call it like a uniparty type of thing, where it's like you can't even tell the difference anymore. And I think people are more independent. And like you guys were talking about before, is COVID was one of the things that probably did, you know, wake a lot of people up to start looking into things a little bit deeper.
I hope so. I mean, they lied to us for years, and now they're coming out and telling us the truth, and people still like to be lied to. It's wild. I won't understand that. But, you know, so many things have changed this year. I saw some people commenting that, like, my district is blue and don't support this run because nothing's ever going to change. So if we don't ever engage or try to change something, we're never going to change it, right? If we're just like, ugh, give up, that's just the way it is. Nothing is going to change. We're not going to be able to course correct California, and we can do it, but it's going to be district by district. We've just let go of politics for way too long to correct it the way we need to. But, you know, we have an opportunity here to change it and to bring some of our people up to the Capitol. And I'm hoping that people in Stockton and Tracy see that, you know, I'm a bipartisan person. I may be running as a Republican, but because I have more conservative values and traditional values. But I, like today, I was at the Capitol today working with Democrats to try to get a bill crossed. But that's what has to be done. You know, most people think legislators at the Capitol all talk to each other and that they're all working together to try to bring some kind of, you know, course correction to California, but that's not true. The Republicans don't talk to the Democrats. They don't have those relationships. So how is any work going to be done if you stay within your own clique? And since we're a super majority of Democrats, we're going to have to work together. So We had some really great conversations with the legislators at the Capitol today. So hoping that we can bring some correction to the state and help children who have transitioned and now detransitioning to get covered medically, because California is a healthcare for all, and they're the only demographic that is being left out of getting covered by healthcare.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Right. That's ironic.
Right? Like, you can get, so a kid can decide to transition, call their doctor, get a 15-minute visit, and decide what body part they want to modify. There's no like having to talk to a therapist or going through steps. They don't do that in California anymore. So, you know, how, and then once they decide that they're going to transition back, they're not medically covered anymore. So they have no insurance to get their testosterone or to get their estrogen, and they can't find doctors because the doctors don't know what to do with them. So why are we, you know, like, do this? So these are the conversations we're having with Democrats. Like, you propose bills, you pass bills that are, you know, to give health care to undocumented immigrants. We need you guys to cover this. Like, stand on your decision if that's really what you support.
Yeah, it's almost holding them accountable. It's like, if you're going to support it to go this way, you got to support it to go the opposite direction too. Not to change the subject, but you mentioned, you know, about staying in California and making a difference in California. And one of the things that Daniel and I have talked about is moving out of California, just kind of like how everybody has actually had a thought about leaving California because of the way that it is. But one of the things that we came to a conclusion, and it's one of, you know, you start thinking about it, it's like, no, California is beautiful. There's a reason why people love living here. Let's stay here and change it to reflect what our values are, what, you know, so that the representatives can actually represent what we want as citizens, as constituents. So, you know, we agree with you 100%. We're not going anywhere, and we hope to, you know, flip it. A lot of people don't know this, but California was red in the past. And, you know, we forget about that. It happened so long ago, but, you know, we have conservative values here.
We do. I mean, northern part of California is either purple or red. It's the large, dense places like San Francisco and LA that have these progressives, and they're all strategically placed. You know, they're all doing this, just how they're redistricting, trying to get their pockets. I have, you know, I'm not moving. Look, I'm from the streets, or I'm from the hood. You gotta get me to move, and I'm not moving. There's like, I'm not scared of the attacks that they throw at me. They call me white supremacist and all this other stuff. And I'm like, seriously? Like, I am exactly what the left wants, right? Like, everything, all the check boxes. And now, just because I think differently, you want to keep me in my place and act like you're pulling my brown card? Like, who are you to even say that? So I'm not moving. I love California. I share custody of my child here. I'm not leaving. And, you know, California, people got to be real careful, because we always hear, we hope Californians fall off the face of the earth. And I don't want to, you know, you guys are crazy. You guys are extreme. Like, we feed a quarter of the nation. If we're not here, good luck getting some food. We have some of the best growing environments in the entire nation. So I think that California is worth saving. I love it here. I'm not moving. I love the weather. I could not imagine living in extreme hot weather like Texas or super cold weather in Colorado.
Or like humid it. Like Florida, or
thank you. My hair would like blow up.
Oh my goodness. But you know, when you were saying that, it's like nothing was like more evident of how the Democrats really are when you know, when Myra Flores got into Congress and she was trying to get into the Latino caucus and they didn't let her because she was a Republican. And it's like, kind of like you said, it's like, isn't she like everything they like would want, and Mexican born, you know, right, person that American dream now is in Congress, like they would be applauding that. But that was like one of those moments where it's like, okay, yeah, this is all BS basically.
Yeah. And, you know, really the Latino community has woken up to being pandered to and having all of these lies told of we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And, you know, around this area, immigration isn't a real issue here, right? Because we're, it's California. It's not, people are more worried about gas and like food and things like that. But in all the pandering that they've done towards our community, they've never actually created a pathway to like citizenship to that's cheaper and easier for families who are already here working. And, you know, people are very upset right now. I've been talking to a lot of the farm workers and they're mad at how the border situation is right now. They're like, I want to stay here. I want to live here. Yet they're open borders. So I think Latinos are waking up. It's a very interesting moment of time. I think 2024 is just going to be wild on many different levels.
You keep saying that.
It's like one of those like, oh man, there's like a full moon for the entire year of 2024.
Man, it started off hot too from the very beginning.
We're only what, 11 days in, and it's like a year worth of news has already happened.
Yeah. There was aliens, like there was like already 6 days into the year.
Yeah. It's been crazy. It's been wild.
I'm expecting to see like a alien with like a BLM poster at some point. Like what else can you see that they're going to try to distract us with?
Oh my gosh. That's crazy. But I wanted to ask you, you said that you started getting involved in 2012 in that era, at that time. And I want to ask you, because, you know, we're talking about, you know, Northern California being conservative purple. What is the difference in response that you're getting or support from 2012 to right now?
It's like night and day. I was very demonized in my thought process, because in 2012, I was learning about the vaccine program. So I was going to all these summits and meeting with doctors and attorneys. And when I would talk to people about it, it was like the most taboo thing you can ever talk about was vaccines or just even politics. People didn't care. They didn't want to get involved. They had no interest in it. And they were really upset that I was even talking about vaccines. So from that, it was a really polarizing time to now. I talk about politics to everybody. Like I'll go to my local bar. People know what's going on. They're not dumb. You know, we're all feeling the sting of this economy and what Gavin has done to our state. Everybody's dealing with it. But people are so fed up that they're ready to get involved in a way that they've never gotten involved before. So it's been, I think, like, again, it's been one of those eye-opening moments between COVID and this piece where Gavin wants to ensure everybody that comes here to California. Those pieces with gas and food, PG&E hikes, people are ready to make changes in the state. And I think we're getting, like I said, it's going to be spicy in 2024. The election's going to be crazy. And just even our local elections are going to be crazy. I never saw people going into like Board of Supervisors meetings or running for a central committee. And now they're just being overwhelmed right now.
Mm-hmm. That's really good, because they made fun of Stockton because no one turned out to go and vote. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of sad if you think about it, but people, I remember in the elections, like you're talking about 2012, is it would come out on the news. No one turns out to vote.
Well, they're fed up, right? Like it really feels like there's no outreach, you know, and I think what politicians know that there's no like votes like that. They can do the bare minimum and still get their vote in. So there's no outreach to the community. People don't know, and people are fed up with the lies that these politicians tell them, and then nothing ever gets done. And we're all sitting here in the community, like in Stockton, there's nothing for our kids to do. There was like an awesome teen center that was downtown where they had like games and stuff, and it's gone. It's abandoned. So there's no sense of like trying to support families and trying to create programs here. But I'm really hoping with this run, I'm going into the community and I'm like doing events, register to vote and all of these things. And I'm hoping to get the Stockton community to show up to vote.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, turnout is definitely going to be important, right? And that's the thing that goes into like that. And we've talked about it before, too. It's like that attitude where you just kind of think like, oh, there's no point. You know, you kind of have to, we've been saying it. It's like, you can't fall on that. You can't rely on that. It's like, you have to, if you got to get up and go vote, right? Even though you might feel like it doesn't matter, like you have to participate.
even Republicans are feeling like they don't want to vote, though. This is the like the problem.
Yeah.
Like it's so infuriating because I hear, oh, well, until we get the voting machines fixed, you know, I'm not going to vote. It's not going to matter. Look, we have a vote and if we're going to let them take that from us. We're going to let them make us feel like we don't have a voice in this. And I'm, you know, hoping to encourage people to vote at every single one of my events. We're going to have a register to vote. We're going to have people help you register to vote. We're going to have the petition. So in California, there's a ballot initiative right now. A couple of years ago, Senator Scott Wiener passed SB 107, and it creates California as a sanctuary state for trans kids. So kids from all over the nation can come here and get sterilized. Well, the ballot initiative is going to take it to the voters. Do you support this happening to our children? So if we can get these like 550,000 signatures by March, late March, we can get it on the ballot. And if we get it on the ballot, then it abolishes 107. So it's going to be, you know, a lot of grassroots efforts. We're going to need, you know, platforms like you guys and all these podcasts to be talking about it, because this is going to, if we can get this on the ballot and passed, it sends a message and a model to the nation that people don't support doing this, these types of medical experimentations on kids, and that California isn't being represented. So hopefully people go, they can go to protectkidsca.com, download the petition, or you can even email them and they'll send you a box and start posting up at churches, getting signatures. And, you know, for voting, I don't even want to stress this enough. We need to like use the left tactics that they use to like harvest, like ballot harvesting, have people at churches collecting the ballots. These things are going to be so important because we're not going to be able to win it just on voting on election day and, you know, in person. People can't do that anymore.
Yeah, and we can actually beat them at their own game. Just traditionally, conservatives are a lot more organized than the Democrats are, just by nature. It's only the few top that organize everything. But if conservatives get engaged, we can beat them at their own game.
Yep. I think we can. I think if we can get behind how they do, you know, they get behind a candidate, they push them through to the finish line, and they have volunteers at churches and picking up ballots at like retirement homes and things like that. We have to start doing that. We can't just, you know, rely on people to kind of figure it out for themselves, because unfortunately people need guidance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the exact opposite of what people are thinking. Is like, oh, I'll wait until the machines are fixed. It's like, no, we have to overwhelm them so we can beat that cheating system that they have.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We have to. We have to be able to beat the algorithm and to like not voting shouldn't even be an option, especially for Republicans. I think that is the most ridiculous statement that anybody can make, to wait for the ballot machines to get fixed. So then my question is, well, are you doing something to fix that then? Are you involved in your central committee? Are you involved with election integrity? Are you involved with something? I know here in Stockton, did you guys hear the Lodi city council member got arrested for cheating on the elections?
Yeah,
because we have an elections integrity committee that's working with the sheriff to prove that this is happening. I mean, there's so many different layers to politics, and that's where we all come in. We all play a piece of this puzzle. So if election integrity is your jam, then meet up with these group of people who are going to do that. If candidacy is your jam, do that, but do something instead of just sitting there complaining about the laws and then complaining about the ballot machines and not doing anything to course correct.
Yeah. Yep. I see a pattern going on across the nation too, because you probably heard about Louisiana, the sheriff's race, where a judge ruled that there was inconsistencies or something to that effect with the voting. And he ruled that they have to run again. You know, they have to do the voting over. So you start hearing that in different parts of the nation, and it's happening right here, like next door. That should be encouraging for everybody right there.
It should be. That's a lot to have that happen with the city council member. That's a huge move. And it's just, it sucks because these kinds of stories and pieces don't get shared by like the big platforms that are talking about, like all these big platforms want to talk about change and how to do things at a grassroots effort, but they don't spotlight the groups or the actions that are being done at a local level to change this. So I hope that changes. You know, people got to start spotlighting it instead of talking about the same old stuff. I'm honestly like not even interested in federal at this point. My jam is local politics, state politics. Federal doesn't touch me right now. So I'm leaving that circus alone right now.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, I think a while, it was like a few months ago, because we were hearing that same sentiment. And then, you know, we're kind of coming to the same conclusion. It's like, well, you can't just sit out. You gotta go and show up, you know, back, you know, bring the numbers. And, you know, there's a lot of people that say, well, nothing's changed and this and that. And we went over, I think it was like 27 states made election changes since 2020. So it's like stuff has happened. Obviously, yeah. Like with anything else, right? We're not going to get everything all at once. It'd be nice, but it takes time. You know, we got to kind of work for it. And hopefully we get in people with the right, you know, the right, what do you call it, goals, that they're going to represent the people and do things that are going to benefit us, the people in there, right? It's going to be little by little. It's going to take long, but, you know, it's worth the battle in the end.
Yeah, I mean, politics is multi-layered. You know, today I posted about talking to legislators regarding the insurance bill, and somebody said, well, you need to just try to put a bill to ban transgender surgeries or gender-affirming care for all children. And I'm like, I would love that. I don't think any child should go through that. Those are children. They don't have the ability to make that decision. But we have to be realistic in a way that we're in California and it needs to be layer by layer, bill by bill. So we're helping with the insurance piece, right? Which is going to make doctors rethink doing a certain procedure because they don't want to have to deal with the insurance. Once all these pieces get put in, we may get to a point to where we ban all, you know, gender affirming care for under 12 or under 18, but we're not there yet. We have to be realistic and we have to work in the ways that we know how to work. So, you know, if we want things to change, it's bill by bill, move by move, resolution by resolution. It's not, I would love to get it all. I would love to ban all the things that I want to ban, but that's just not going to happen. So, you know, with Freedom Angels, our mission and our work has been to hold town hall meetings all over the nation. And in these meetings, we show people how to engage in politics, how to talk to legislators, because people don't really know how to do it. It's really intimidating to get involved in politics. And so if I do, by the grace of God, win this seat, it's going to be the same thing. I expect a legislator to hold town hall meetings or polls or talk to their community about bad legislation that is hitting their desk. Like, why aren't they talking to us about a bill that will medically emancipate children? Why aren't they talking to us about a bill that will remove children from the home if the parents don't affirm their kids' gender identity? Why aren't they talking to us about this? And so I ran so I can talk to people about it and I can tell them, this is how you get involved. This are the bills that are before you. How do you want me to represent you? And, you know, I have no interest in special interest groups and lobbying firms. None of that interests me. I want course correction and I want to fix some of these really bad legislation pieces that have passed in California.
No, that's great. And a lot of people don't realize that we have to be patient. You know, once we get one person in there or two, it'll turn into three and four. Mm-hmm. And with, you know, all these children that have elected, you know, to have these really serious operations and go through these serious procedures, time is also going to reveal that they weren't ready or they weren't mentally ready to make that, or maybe that's not even what they wanted. It's hard enough growing up being a kid. There's a lot of confusion and you add more to it and you skew their vision and they start thinking that they want something that, you know, they're not even developed enough to know exactly what they want, but time is going to reveal that all of those things were maybe mistakes and there's going to be an outcry when they want to come back and, you know, have those operations that you're talking about and go back to, they realize that they are the person that they were. They were just confused, made a mistake and want to fix it. And all of that is going to reveal itself in time. And I have a feeling that that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think we started seeing the first wave of that was girls like Chloe Cole, who she had a double mastectomy at 15. And now she's, you know, 19 and she's like, this isn't what I wanted. And thankfully she's in the threshold to sue, but it's a really, really short window of time. And, you know, the studies are showing that it takes up to 10 years for people to actually feel brave enough to come out and say, this is what I wanted, or to feel comfortable enough with themselves to move forward on a lawsuit. So one of the other pieces of legislation we're trying to get carried is to expand the statute of limitations. So up to 10 years. So if children who transition like Chloe at 15, they have 10 years to go back and sue. And that's what's happening right now. You know, and we were talking to a few doctors and they're like, you know, this was doctors don't know what to do with this. This is all brand new. And it's like, of course it's brand new. This is literal experimentation on children. Like, of course it's brand new. You know, we need to have real conversations about this and talk about how California has been focused on lowering the age of consent to medical procedures, but then raises the age when it comes to being interrogated by police officers. It's up to the age of 26 because they say the science is proving that the prefrontal cortex isn't developed enough to make decisions when they're being interviewed by police officers. So if they can't make a decision on talking with police, how are they making a decision to have a double mastectomy? That's a big deal. And then they don't even get covered if they want to go and get reconstructive surgery. They're like, no, that's cosmetic. You can't get covered for that. So where legislators right now are in a hard spot. They're going to either have to accept the legislation that we're introducing. We're going to get it carried either way, right? We're going to get it carried either by Democrat or Republican. Somebody's going to carry it. We already know. But we want the Democrats to carry it because this is their jam. They're talking about insurance for all. They're talking about equity and inclusion and marginalized communities. Well, this is a marginalized community that you guys should cover. So what is it? Are you going to stand on all 10 toes with your decision to cover, or are you going to cower and leave this small group of people out to dry when you're covering undocumented immigrants?
Yeah, no, and it's a community that they, you know, in a sense, helped create.
Yeah, they did. They pushed it. Schools are pushing. You know, if you have a kid in public school, then you know how hard they're pushing that there. A lot of the good teachers have left because the policies just are so extreme of hiding things from parents, socially transitioning children at schools. It's happening. There's secret closets that kids have access to with like chest binders and tucking underwear. And these kids can transition at school and then have, this is literally a mental health issue. And teachers and principals will all lie to parents and won't tell them. I mean, kids are so like emotionally not ready to deal with these issues at a young age. And so you're having the schools come at them. You're having social media come at them with the same garbage. They're having their friends. And then now they're feeling like they're in the wrong body. They're being lied to. Parents are dangerous. They have no one to trust but the people at school. I mean, it's all a really vicious cycle, and we need some accountability with these public schools as well.
Yeah. I mean, the way that you were just describing it, it's like they're being attacked. It's a full frontal attack. I mean, from all directions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. But they're on the forefront of this war, and it's like, we can't let our kids be on the forefront of this. We have to step in front of them. And if you can homeschool, I always encourage people to homeschool. Pull your kids from the system, create a homeschool co-op, and get your friends together and get your kids out of the public school system.
Yeah. We ran, Daniel pulled up some statistics. What was it from?
I think from 2012 to like 2021 and for homeschooling. And then you just see in 2020, like just the straight it takes off. And it's like, good, you know, it's like, yeah, I have my two kids. We're homeschooling because at this point, given what I see, you know, it's like, no, I don't want to take that risk. I don't need other people trying to manipulate, indoctrinate my kid. Right. And that's just kind of what people are getting. And it's sad because some people don't have any other option. Right. They have to work, you know, we're in California, more than likely both parents work. So it's like, you need to send your kid to school. And it sucks because as a parent, you would hope, okay, the school is going to educate my kid. So, you know, and I don't have to worry about all this other stuff. But nowadays it's like, what are they really educating them on? You know, a bunch of the testing numbers are so damn low here that it's like, well, what's the point of school?
Yeah.
I know kids are graduating illiterate, but, you know, they demand we send our children to school, and then they create these Head Start programs that capture your children at a really, really young age because they know that you can't afford to stay home. They get it from the start. They get your kids from the very beginning. And, you know, I'm in Stockton, so there wasn't before COVID, a lot of access or resources to homeschooling. Like I said, parents work. It's really difficult to live here on one person income. I know my husband works long hours, so that way I can homeschool. But this is where we do tap into the community, and we, you know, this is the true it takes a village, because you get with friends who maybe are homeschooling and don't work, and you create your co-ops and you work within each other to not outsource children's education. You know, with COVID, people realized their children weren't really learning in school. They saw them on Zooms, barely participating, and now kids are failing. And we're unfortunately seeing the fallout from the bad decisions of Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, it's all about priorities. It's like your children should be number one priority. And you know, we didn't have the luxury of being able to homeschool, but you know, I did realize that we were the biggest influence in our kids' lives. And we talked about that in the podcast before. And is if we realize that we're the biggest influence in our kids' lives, you know, I remember picking up my son from school and asking him, and I've told this story before, is that I would ask him, what did you learn today? Well, the teacher said X, Y, and Z. And I go, okay, so what did you think? Well, I thought X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, no, you're repeating what they told you. I'm asking you what you think. And after a couple of times going back and forth, he finally got it. He goes, actually, what they said doesn't really make sense because of, you know, ABC. So, and I always tell the story and I say, well, I had to pick up my kid and I had to deprogram them from whatever they were programming them at school. But if you don't recognize and acknowledge that, you know, you're the biggest influence and you should be the biggest influence in your kid's life, then you're just oblivious. And before you know it, someone else raised your kids and they have their values, not your values or family values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my oldest went to public school. My middle does still because we share custody and I can't homeschool. But my youngest has never been in the system. And it is a sacrifice. You know, it's a sacrifice to homeschool. It's a sacrifice on all of us. We have to figure out how to do things. And my husband had a health incident in the beginning of December. And I honestly don't even know how we made it. By the grace of God, we made it for the entire month of December. And the first week of January, there was no income. There was no work because he was home, right? We couldn't get disability. He's in a union. There's no sick pay. So it was even more of a sacrifice. But thankfully, because I've been doing this for so long, the other organization that I formed is called Mom Militia. It's a national group of women who learn how to prep. We prepare, we garden, we can, we do all the like Little House on the Prairie kind of stuff. Having those skills saved my family from like starving, because we didn't have, literally we had no income, no money coming in. We had all of our bills. We're all crazy. We had to pay all that. And at the end, we didn't have anything. Because I learned to can, we had full meals on demand. Like, we were fine. We was like, oh, just maybe pop this out of the pantry and, you know, make something from it. But it's really, this shows us that it's up to us to make changes in the world that we want. It's up to us to prepare ourselves for whatever may come. You know, we can't depend on a politician to come in and save us. Nobody's going to save us. It is up to us as a community to learn how to sustain ourselves, to learn how to just protect our family, and to learn about politics, because we can ignore it, but it's not going to ignore us. They're going to keep on introducing restrictions. And unless we get involved and start participating, they're going to keep running us over. And 2024 is just a really nice opportunity to make some changes and to flip some seats that are so desperately needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have something, Daniel? Because I've got another
question. Yeah, go for it. I mean, you live in Stockton, so go for it.
But no, it's, you know, one of the things that we talk about is education, right? You know, we don't know everything. We have a lot to learn. So, you know, maybe people that are listening to this don't know exactly what the responsibilities of a state assembly member are. So if you can kind of, you know, give a description of what the responsibilities are.
Yeah, I mean, it would be overseeing my district. So really, for me, and I'm going to say the responsibilities for me, because they have taken their responsibilities outside of their responsibilities. Mm-hmm. My goal is to support my community with the things that they need for homelessness, for mental health issues, like the mental health facility that's here in San Joaquin County. It hasn't been updated for like 30 years. The professional offices have, but the mental health hospital has it. So the work that I would be doing would be supporting the local community and efforts for homelessness, for mental health issues, for education, and, you know, for the state budget. So I don't want to go outside of my responsibilities. Like, you know, they have done overreaching bills and overreaching policies that are really up to a state or to a county board of supervisors or to a municipality. So the job I would do is just represent my constituents at a state level with any bills that come before me and with any budget bills, water issues, like the water infrastructure, and then supporting my local district with any kind of budget issues that they need to create to create resources and tools for the people of the community here.
Okay. And you say create the bills, but as far as passing laws, you know, I know the legislatures, but if you could explain the process so everybody that, you know, is listening knows how you work hand in hand with that.
How a bill is introduced and passed?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the law is created.
Okay. So as a legislator, you would create, think of a bill. So like for us, we want a bill carried. We drafted it. Aaron Friday from Protect Kids drafted the bill. We take it to our legislator. The legislators talk amongst themselves or staffers to see what kind of, I call it restrictions because that's what bills are. They're restrictions on us. So What kind of restrictions they want to create. Once that's done, the Speaker of the House will decide where that bill is going to go in a committee. So it'll be like Health Committee, Finance Committee, whatever committee they decide. And then The community comes in and starts saying, like, I oppose or I support this bill during a committee. From there, it goes to the House floor. So I'm in Assembly. It would go to the Assembly floor for a vote. From there, it goes to the other House, so to the Senate, to their committee, their floor. And then it comes back for a final vote. So there's a lot of movement in a bill. There's a lot of opportunities to get involved and to say, I don't support this, or I support this, I want to push this through. And sometimes, and I think through COVID, everybody has seen that there are real no rules in politics. They can hear the bills however they want. They can pull committee members from the committee and replace them with somebody else. We saw that with 277. We could have actually beat that bill, but at the last minute, representatives were switched out and we lost it. So there's no rules in politics. The best thing I can say is talk to your legislators, make appointments in your district office and ask them what kind of bills have been introduced and have a meeting with them. That way you can decide if this is something that you support. And if you don't, you can start working within your community to oppose it and then go either to the Capitol or again, meet with your district office.
Yeah, you see, and the reason I asked that question and the way that you explained it is people don't know how the system works. We go to school, elementary, middle school, high school, and they don't explain this to you. Unless I'm mistaken, it didn't get explained to me. I don't know if it got explained to you guys.
I missed that day.
Well, yeah, I cut that day. Yeah.
No, but I think you're...
Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. The way you described it too also goes to show like why we need to put people in there, because in California, the supermajority the Democrats have had, it's like that should be like a tougher process to get these things through. Right now they have, you know, almost no pushback because
there's no, like, resistance.
There's no resistance. So everything, you know, we went over the new laws a couple episodes ago, and it's like you read them and you go, this shit made it through, like, what the hell, you know? And it's like, well, yeah, there's no resistance to it. So it's like whatever feeling they got that moment, it's like, here, I want to make this law. Here you go.
Yeah. And, you know, again, nobody knows how civics works. You know, we try to hold, they're called grassroots lobby days at the Capitol. We train people from A to Z. Like, this is where a bill is written, just how you ask. This is the office mm-hmm. that it's written in. This is the floor that, like, we physically show you where it's at so you can connect the dots. But legislators don't tell their community about this. They don't engage with them. They don't show them how to do this. And it's really important that people learn. You know that new law that they lifted, the ban on cruising? Right. It was, for me, it was sugar, like, coat sprinkled on shit. Because this could have been done at a municipality level. Like, people, this group of people who wanted to lift the ban could have went to their city council and could have went to their board of supervisors and created a resolution to lift the ban on cruising. It's up to each city and each municipality. It didn't have to go to a state level. But the representative who introduced it, I forgot who she was. She went to all the car clubs and was like, if you vote for me, I'll lift the ban on cruising. Instead of telling them, if you want to lift the ban on cruising, you can go talk to your city council. But this is how they sprinkle sugar on shit. They're like, I'm going to do this and this and this for you, but I'm not going to really tell you, like, how to actually make change in your community, but I still want your vote. This is what they do. And yeah. If I get in there, man, I'm going to be like the biggest whistleblower. Like, you guys know what's going on. You guys know how to do this. Let me show you. Come into my office.
Yeah, you can do this on your own. This is what we can help you with. And
absolutely. Yeah,
no, that's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, one of the other things that we have talked about is the mandates that came about during COVID. And a lot of people don't know that a mandate doesn't, I mean, what is a mandate? It's not a law. Mm-hmm. What happens if you don't follow a mandate? Everybody just, they heard it's almost like they invented the word mandate and replaced it with law, and everybody just fell for it and fell in line.
Yeah, I mean, you have Gavin Newsom pretending that he has authority to lock us down and to close businesses. When all this happened, I was screaming inside. It was like the first 2 days, and you know, I was at home. I was like, I don't know what this is, but let me just sit around and, like, wait it out a little bit. And right before COVID hit, AB 262 passed, and we were fighting that bill. It allowed public health officers to do whatever they wanted to do during an outbreak. So this is what set the tone for the lockdowns, right? So 2 days later, me and Tara are on the phone, and we're like, I don't know how this feels. Like, what do you think? And we're like, no, this is garbage. So we were doing district trainings for people to go into their local public health office and start working to stop the lockdowns from there. Cause we're like, it's not a state thing. It's not a federal thing. It's a district thing. It's your local area public health officer that now has control over your district of how, you know, the lockdowns are going to move. I was arrested at the Capitol for being a public health threat because we protested against the lockdowns. We had one of the biggest protests in the state. We were the first to protest against the lockdowns, and they arrested 32 of us. And during the arrest, you know, they threw me on the ground, whatever, and put us in the basement. And then they let us go with a ticket saying, okay, you're a public health threat because you're not following public health orders, blah, blah, blah. And then 2 weeks later, they had to drop it because BLM hit and set Sacramento on fire. Mm-hmm. So they were like, we can't prosecute you for this. And then, and the funny thing, we were arrested by officers who didn't even have a mask on. So it's like, I was like, wait a minute.
You should have sued them.
Yeah. That's that rules for thee and not for me.
Right. Yeah. But no, it was, you know, people freaked out about the mandates. They freaked out about the lockdowns. Here in Stockton, I helped a group of business owners stay open. It was a lot of them from, like, Miracle Mile area and some from the Lincoln Center. But the Stockton Record and LA Times reported on this because we were all in front of City Hall, and we were like, no, you're not going to shut us down. We have a phone tree going. If we have public health coming to one of these businesses, we're calling the phone tree and all of us are standing in front. You're not doing this. So after we did that, LA Times and Stockton Record put a big picture of us with all the businesses that were staying open and said, anti-vaxxers, interfere.
They resorted to name calling.
Yeah.
They made it, they called us far right anti-vaxxers who have taken over Stockton businesses to try to scare businesses away from staying open. They don't want to be labeled anti-vax. They don't want to be labeled all these things. But, you know, we really try to show people that these mandates were recommendations. They weren't mandates. They were, it was recommended, and there were no lawful recommendations. You did not have to follow this. And if you did get a fine or get arrested, don't pay the fine, because the minute you pay the fine is you're saying, yes, I'm guilty. I'm going to pay this off. Mm-hmm. We also helped people who were small business owners leave the private domain or public domain and go into the private domain. So they were private membership associations, so they can stay open without having the state overreach and fine them for it.
Yeah, it's like find the loophole to beat them at their own game.
Well, I mean, it's not even a loophole. It's like a law. Like it's what they use, right? Like yeah. they use trust. Yeah. They use all these things, these entities to protect their businesses. Well, I know about them. Tara knows about them. So if we know about them, you're going to know about them. So we held, you know, we held awesome classes and trainings on how to get out of the public domain, and people did it.
That's awesome.
That yeah. And then one thing too, that like was encouraging this second time around, because it's like they were gearing to try to do it again. I don't know, like kind of October, September. And we were talking about it. It's like, no way people are going to listen to it this time. So it was encouraging to see that like literally nobody listened to it.
Man,
so we're going in the right direction.
Anyway, Stockton, San Joaquin County, but Stockton was one of the best cities in the state when it came to lockdowns and things like that. Like I never got kicked out of store. Nobody ever approached me. I mean, I never wore a mask. So I never had to deal with it. And it was, Stockton was the terrain that was actually the most solid. Tara and I wrote some resolutions to pass at district levels. And we got resolutions passed here in San Joaquin County. It was to ban the vaccine passport, because a Republican actually created the bill. And I forgot who it was, but he created the bill that you would have to show your QR code in order to go into stores. And he said, oh, it was just because I didn't want my constituents to damage their vaccine card. And we're like, what? Like, you're a Republican, boy, you better get in line. Like, we had to like get him straight, and they ended up dropping the bill. But we created the resolution to ban the vaccine passport here in San Joaquin County from any county buildings, and to give children or families mass choice for children in schools. So there's a lot of power in local districts. All politics is local. If you haven't went to a board of supervisors meeting or a city council meeting and you want to see change in your area, that is the place to start. Start there, start talking to them, make relationships. And when I say make relationships, introduce yourself, because they have to know who you are. They can't represent you if they've never heard from you.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, you know, we've talked about, I think it's Long Beach. They came out and they said, hey, don't even think about it. We're not going to shut down. There's not going to be any mandates or anything like that. So, you know, that is really encouraging, because, you know, I say this all the time. I'm an optimist, and they want us to be down and out and, you know, not even be up for a fight. But if, you know, if we're optimist and we look at the positive things that are happening here in California, you know, like I was telling Daniel too, is like, you know, I saw some videos of people protesting in Hollywood, and it's like, if they're protesting there, I mean, good things are happening.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think this is really the year that people get in their power and they start realizing that these guys and these legislative offices are not our friend. They're not here to support us. I think this is a really good year to go out, talk to your community, and make change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kind of, you know, before we wrap up and all that, so for you, District 13, what's your priority? What's going to be your priority? Like, you know, once Denise is in the assembly, like what's your priority for the district?
You know, I really hate this answer when people say homelessness, because it's always like the main thing of everybody, but it really is. I mean, San Joaquin County, we have a problem with having a huge homeless issue, but also no solutions, no trade school opportunities, no family shelters. I don't want to enable people sleeping on the streets. You know, we're not going to hand out needles. We're not going to do that here. I really want to prioritize safety here and give children an opportunity to have some kind of resources to learn outside of the schools. I have my eyeball on that teenage center, that teen center, where they, you know, have different opportunities to teach kids like how to make resumes, how to really have life skills. So my priority is going to be going into the community and finding out what they want and what they need and how I can support that. I think it's time we stop with this whole Prop 47 crime thing. You know, we got to support small businesses. We got to get safety back in our neighborhoods, and we got to get kids and families supported instead of creating parental alienation like California has created.
That's really good. Yeah, that is one of the biggest topics here. I was driving down City Hall, and literally across the street in that little park that they have right there is like bonfires with their tents and everything. I don't even get upset. It's just sad. It's just sad that it's so close to home and literally on the lawn of City Hall right there.
I know. And then we have our city council, like one day the park was clean. They're like, look how clean it is. We're picking up the homeless. And then they were back yesterday. We need real solutions. There's $17 billion put into the homeless issue, and we have nothing to show for it. There's nothing. Stockton has a lot of buildings that we can utilize. There's a lot of things that we can do. And I really like to focus on things like trade schools and trade opportunities to get people on the path that they really want to be on instead of drugs and homelessness. We don't have any time for that. We don't have like the time to not have our kids at parks because there's full of needles and homeless people. We got to start cleaning up this area.
Yeah. Agreed.
That sounds good to me.
Before I leave Saturday, if anybody is in Stockton or can get to Stockton, rain or shine, I rented a ginormous tent, so we're not being rained on, but bring your umbrella. We're having a canvassing event from 10 to 12. So we'll be handing out flyers of the race. It's going to be at Victory Park. And then we're going to give, we're going to provide free barbecue lunch. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have some music. We're going to make it fun. And we're going to start talking starting point at the Victory Park neighborhoods.
That sounds awesome. We'll try to make it there. I mean,
that's cool.
Hometown, we got to support.
Right? Yeah. Talk about change. We'll come out.
Yeah. No, hey, I'm going to put where my money, I have to. I have to go out.
I do. Now you're on the spot. Now it's like,
yeah, now
you're hey, I'm saying it right now.
Look, Denise is gonna put you on blast if she don't see you.
Legit, I will.
Hey, I don't have anything on my calendar. I don't have anything to do so far, so I'll be there.
All right, well, I'll see you this weekend.
All right, well, Denise, thank you for coming on, and then you know, we hope to have you on all the way up through the election, and you know, we'll have you on again, and we'll see how everything is going. But you know, from what I've heard from you, you know, it sounds like you have the right idea, the right mindset to go into, you know, our current legislature and kind of help the people out. Because like you said, it's like, and then we've said it too, it's like a lot of these people in there are just kind of focusing on their party and not the people.
Yeah.
And we definitely need to shift that.
I know, I'm ready to get in there and show them that you poked the wrong mother.
There you go. Cool.
All right. Well, thank you guys for having me on. I would love to be back. And then I will see you on Saturday.
All right. See you Saturday.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye. Cool. That was pretty good. She's got the, you know, the right ideas, the right reasons, you know, to go in there. And it's like, yeah, a lot of people have had enough. So, you know, good that she's going in there.
Yeah, she's that leader that we've been talking about, you know. It's a fighter. It's not going to just lay down and cower when, you know, she gets some backlash or, you know, opposition, mm-hmm. you know, trying to start name calling.
They're gonna have fun. It seems like they'll have a hard time with it,
stuff like that. Yeah, so I think we're beyond that, man. You know, it's just having leaders with that fighting spirit. Oh, that's what we were saying, is just having mm-hmm. that fighter spirit. So that's awesome.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, yeah. That was a pretty good one. And then, you know, hopefully we'll have her on again soon and see how the campaign is going. So, yeah, that was good.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's see. What's next?
What's next? I think our next guest is Michael Oxford out of District 17, which is kind of Santa Cruz. I think it's Santa Cruz, Monterey. It's almost similar to Peter Hernandez's district. So We got that guy on January 23rd, Michael Oxford. So California State Senate District 17 candidate. And then February 13th, we're going to have Peter Hernandez on again. So that's a Congress candidate, U.S. Congress candidate, District 18. I'll make sure I didn't say that right. I didn't say that wrong. Yeah, District 18. So those are the next two. And then, you know, hopefully if I'm able to find other people that are running locally, you know, or in their cities or wherever, right? If you guys... anybody listening knows any candidates they'd like for us to speak to, you know, you can shoot us a DM on Instagram, Latino Free Minds, Instagram, and, you know, we'll reach out to the candidate and we'll see if we're able to get them on. But, you know, I think these conversations are good, especially with people that are going to go into the legislative system and, you know, hopefully represent the people like we were saying.
Yeah. You know, as much as we talk about... you know, presidential races and Trump and Biden and everything, we need to be talking about local races for sure. I mean, she said it, the ones that impact us the most are those local races, city council and those type of races. So I think this is a good direction, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, cool.
Good stuff. Well,
thank you everybody for tuning in. Make sure to like, follow. All that good stuff that, you know, help us grow. Thanks for your time, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Peace be with you.